Good morning. Good morning. Monday morning, right? My favorite day of the week. I get to come back here and kick off the week strong, really strong. We've had a full day of calls, great guests. And here in the 11 o'clock hour, we're joined by Boston Herald political reporter Tim Dunn, my longtime friend, who's doing great work up there, as he's done great work at other places, including here and Fox News and down the Cape. Good morning, Tim Dunn. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great with that introduction. I got to bring you around with me.
Tim, you really hit the ground running at the Boston Herald. Doesn't surprise me. Let's talk about what's going on at the Massachusetts Convention Center.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you. Yeah, so there's two state committee investigations going on, and there's one hearing coming up. One of them is on, and it's been widely reported on, this issue is issues of racial discrimination and exclusion and bias at the convention center. So they hired in October 2024, the authority board, the Massachusetts Convention Authority Board. They hired appointed a CEO, Marcel Vernon, a black man from Boston. He has been successful in businesses as a CFO other places, and okay. A good voice for that community. And he was hired to really root out those problems. And he's certainly tried doing that. And he has been called to testify before the Joint Committee on Racial Equity, Bias, and Inclusion, I think is the official name of the committee. Okay. That's chaired by Rep. Bud Williams and Senator Liz Miranda.
Now, stay tuned for him more about Bud Williams in later stories. But anyway, go ahead.
Exactly, as we were talking about. But that is going to be set for January. What we got over the weekend at the Herald was some information. One of them is a public document that was sent out by Senator Mark Montigny, our state senator down here. He chairs the Senate Committee on Post Audit and Oversight. And he sent a summons letter to the CEO, Vernon. And this time it was about a little bit, what I would say, a little bit more serious matters when it comes legally.
Yes.
Montigny had summons Vernon to, one, testify in an upcoming hearing, but also provide information related to we can kind of summarize as corruption, essentially.
Yes.
It's related to procurement of contracts by leadership at the MCCA. And as we know so far, Marcel Vernon is not, the CEO is not involved in this. He's been trying to get all this, rooted out of the convention center. Procurement of contracts, mismanagement of public funds, destruction of records. There's also surveillance of employees without their consent. They are hiring,
really?
Yeah, hiring private investigators. And outside. It's all mentioned in Montigny's letter to Vernon. And so some pretty concerning allegations here.
Yes.
Based on the information they're requesting. And what happened after that was Vernon sent a letter back to the committee welcoming the investigation. He's saying, we need transparency here. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, committee. I'm willing to bring forth all this information. Now, we got a letter from Vernon's attorney. His name is Jeff Robbins. And he had sent us a letter of notice that he had sent to the Convention Center Board of Directors who had scheduled a meeting for last night, which was in violation of open meeting law.
And explain why that is.
Well, with open meeting law, you're for any public entity, if you're going to have a hearing or a meeting about it, you got to let the public know within at least 48 hours, mm-hmm. also within 2 business days. So they had scheduled this meeting on Friday night for Sunday night. So the Saturday and Sunday, not business days, also not within 48 hours.
Right.
So this emergency meeting was held in executive session. So, and they had listed on the agenda item, it was to discuss litigation over certain matters, or I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but to discuss litigation that they wouldn't want to make otherwise public. Now,
which is sometimes a catch-all used by boards to convene executive sessions.
Oh, exactly, as you well know.
Yeah.
What Vernon's lawyer, the CEO's lawyer, told us, he sent us a letter of notice, that he sent to that board notifying them that they're in violation. But also, he says that this is just purely to terminate Vernon for welcoming the investigations and saying he'll turn over all this information. What also is interesting, too, is at the request of the committee, they requested that no employees, including Vernon, at the convention center be involved in procuring documents. They went as far as to order an outside expert appointed by the Secretary of State's office to exclusively come get these documents. So
this is Senator Montigny doing that.
Yeah, in his letter. And in response, Vernon, you know, I think went a step further, and what he did was he put on paid leave the I got to get his title up here, but it's one of the chief information security officers, okay. Robert Noonan, and he's on paid administrative leave. The board, and I don't know how their bylaws in the convention center work, they just said nope, and they reinstated him.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a very, you see how things are going on right now, back and forth, and how the board's reacting. And another lawyer who I was just getting information from, who's I can't really say who he's representing or who he is, but he told me that they're running around with their hair on fire right now at the convention center. They're all scared.
We have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. You can check him out at bostonherald.com. He's been doing amazing work up there. So Senator Montigny has, and a lot of people don't realize this, as the chairman of post-audit, Senator Montigny has subpoena power.
Yes.
So he's subpoenaing these records, and meaning they have to comply.
They have to. Yeah, and so far, and to Vernon's credit, so far he is, and
that may have cost him his job. Right?
It may have, and we're trying to figure that out. We've sent emails out to the board of directors. His attorney was not able to be in the executive session meeting, which I'm sure makes sense. But he did say the meeting did happen, and he's directed all questions to the MCCA, the Massachusetts Convention Center Authority. So we've reached out, and we're cracking on it now.
We're speaking with Tim Dunn. As I said, he's with the Boston Herald. Check out all his work at bostonherald.com. And also, he's on social media. How do people follow you, Tim?
I'm on social media on Twitter at Consider Me Dunn. It's D-U-N-N is my last name, so that kind of Dunn. I'm also on Facebook as Timmy Dunn, because I was known in my childhood as Timmy. Now, yeah. I graduated to Tim when I was in high school. And then I'm also on Truth Social, to your advice, actually.
Yes.
It was a really good idea. And I'm on there at Tim Dunn _ Boss Herald.
Boss Herald. _ Boss Herald. So, Tim, this is going to be a huge story. I mean, that is a huge agency, the Boston Convention Center, right?
Absolutely. And there's been questions, and even my editor was telling me how there, before I came here, certainly, and for years, there's been questions about, kind of what's going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a telling thing nowadays. You see the way more explosive fraud stories over in Minnesota, and you hear about different things going on in Massachusetts, and that also, also with the rise of costs we've seen, and and if you're living in Boston, you're probably not happy about hearing about this, along with 13% rise in taxes.
So, right.
It's definitely a timely story, and we're lucky enough we were able to get it exclusively.
Howie Carr, another Boston Herald guy like you, he's done a lot of stories on the Boston Convention Center over the years. Some of the gangsters, the relatives of the gangsters that work in there. I mean, it's just been, I wouldn't describe it as a cesspool, but it's had a lot of problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've even heard, Bulger might have had an arm in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely doesn't have a greatest history, but, it's just interesting how they're kind of battling these two fronts. I mean, the racial... It certainly is an important
yes,
thing,
I would agree.
But it almost takes a back seat now with all these allegations.
Yes.
When you mess with public money, taxpayer-funded money, it's a quasi-public agency.
Using alleged private investigators to investigate employees, money being... And you said, what did the financial officer do? It's being alleged or being inquired about by Senator Montigny?
Absolutely. So, of course, it's refreshing now. The chief financial officer was or a former, he was mentioned a lot. He was there for a number of years, almost a decade, from like the mid-2010s to about 2024. And the letter that he...
Does his name begin with an O or a Mick?
None of those, actually.
All right, all right.
But we looked up through the state's website who that was.
Okay.
And it was Mike Esmond. But it was, to make note, this Mr. Esmond, he wasn't mentioned specifically in Montigny's letter. We just looked to see who... who the chief financial officer they're referring to
right.
is named. So Montigny didn't name him himself. I want to make that clear. I just got to find where I was in that thing, but I apologize.
That's all right, Tim. You can't find it while I'm having a coughing fit. So it's like back to the old days.
Exactly,
again,
exactly, right? Just throw it together.
But I think it's very interesting how much work, of course, Senator Montigny is used to doing this type of work. He did it on the Turnpike as well, asking for the administration, the Democrats, to turn over records that blew up that deal and resulted in the resignation of the Secretary of Transportation.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and so I just found it. So when it comes to the chief financial officer, the former one, Montigny's letter does say he wanted the CEO to provide information on about multiple withdrawals from the Convention Center Fund between 2023 and 2025, and the use of separate accounts, subverting the statutory cap on taxpayer subsidies for MCCA administrative and operational spending. And he's also accusing the, or, you know, it seems from his letter, it's the former CFO is being accused also of a high volume and a volume of high cost overruns racked up through change orders under the Capital Projects Division that were approved by the former CFO. So a lot of things going on with him, too.
So, of course, Senator Montigny's also familiar with change orders from the Big Dig. That was the magic. It's always the magic on public bidding. You get in there with a low bid, and then you start with the change orders, right? You start with the change orders, and they generally don't stop until the taxpayers are screaming. If anyone hears them, which obviously in this case, Senator Montigny does hear them. We're going to take a break and we come back. If you have any questions for Tim Dunn, certainly can call him. Tim, when we get back, I want to talk to you about you getting the governor on the record.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the gas pipelines.
Sure thing.
All right, 508-996-0. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by D's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, soda, and a bag of chips for only $5.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
I'll bet you never heard old Marshall Dillon say, Miss Kitty, have you ever thought of running away? Settling down, would you marry me? If I ask you twice and beg you pretty please, she'd have said yes in a New York minute. They never tied a knot. His heart wasn't in it. He just stole a kiss as he rode away.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. You're the audience. You know, the Bedford Police Union is asking for your support while they negotiate for a fair contract. That contract would include better education and training programs for the New Bedford police officers, new police equipment and technology, and for safe police staffing levels. They can't do this alone, so please support public safety and your brave New Bedford police officers while they keep this great city safe. For more information, visit New Bedford Police Union's Facebook page and their website, NewBedfordPoliceUnion.org, NewBedfordPoliceUnion.org. This message is paid for the men and women, the brave men and women of the New Bedford Police Union. We have Tim Dunn here from the Boston Herald. Tim, you had a recent run-in with the governor of Massachusetts, Maura Healey, about the gas pipelines. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was a busy second week of work at the Herald for me. The governor was holding a press conference on something education related, and we had been just going over the different costs of energy. We had been sent information by Paul Craney at Mass Fiscal, who's been on your program a lot and other programs, and you know, everyone knows Paul. And we had got a report that Mass Fiscal had obtained, an independent report about the real reason behind energy costs in Massachusetts, and it's been discussed, I think, actually by you at length too. And as people know, it's all these different state programs and climate mandates and goals that are really behind it. And we were trying to say, okay, well, you know, maybe we can follow up with Governor Healey with an off-topic question after this press conference. And luckily for the story, she had sent out a press release just earlier of when she was at a economics convention in Boston, like an hour before this other press conference. And she had been blaming President Trump and his tariffs on Canadian goods for the rise in housing and energy costs here, which, you know, I mean, maybe there is some substance to that, but I think most people would find it to be a leap, especially after you read this, you know, read this report from the Fiscal Alliance.
Right.
And, so I asked her. I said, you know, you mentioned and blamed President Trump's and his Canadian tariffs, you know, for the rise in energy costs. Would you consider your stoppage of two gas pipelines to Massachusetts, its Attorney General, any contributor? And she did not like that. She snapped at me, and she, you know, first of all, I didn't do that, as we've kind of heard play a
yes,
lot.
Yes, I'll
her.
Play in a moment. Yeah.
Oh, sure you will. And you know, so that really took off. And as a reporter, as you know, it's a gift getting that.
Oh yeah.
Especially when everyone knows, everyone's seen the video, everyone's seen what she has said. And if she has an explanation, then we're more than happy to print that. If she has a, if she even says, hey, you know, I was wrong back then. We're happy to print that.
People make mistakes. I've made mistakes. I voted for her, and I admit it. But when I was an elected official, sometimes you think something's going to work out, and it doesn't, or the facts change afterwards, whatever. There's nothing wrong with saying I've learned from what I've done.
Absolutely. And I think
lying is wrong.
I think the voters would appreciate it. But yeah, lying, what you're doing is you're telling the press, and you're telling, more importantly, the voters that, you know, kind of shut up and listen to me. This is right. Believe this now.
We are going to listen to that clip. Here's our own guest, Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald, with the governor, thanks to Mass Fiscal Alliance. They got this on tape. Did you get it on tape? And then,
well, I had it on recording. I had no idea they were even next to me. They were filming it the whole time, though. It was Paul's sneaky. Paul's a sneaky guy.
In the best sense of the word.
Exactly.
In the best sense of the word. All right, folks, hold on. See if Toby Keith is done. I see he appears to be done. All right. So this is Tim Dunn at the State House, my guest right now. Check him out at bostonherald.com. With the governor captured live on video, forever memorialized. This is, it's made the national circuit. It'll make it, certainly, if she gets reelected and tries to run for president.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's just a blatant lie. You know, I mean, I don't know what else to say it.
Here we go, folks. This is the governor.
Remember, I stopped 2 gas pipelines from coming into this state.
I've been about bringing more gas supply into Massachusetts. You know, I never stopped pipelines.
Would you consider your cancellation of 2 gas pipelines as Attorney General any contributor to rising energy costs here?
Well, first of all, I didn't do that.
Mass Fiscal is great with the videos, aren't they?
Yeah, Mass Fiscal is fantastic. Check them out, massfiscal.org. Let me play that again, because it's Tim at the end of the clip asking her the question. You hear her when she's start bragging about stopping the pipelines. Then you hear her in another speech saying she didn't do it. And then you have our reporter friend here, Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald, asking her and what she does. It's really, really outrageous.
Remember, I stopped 2 gas pipelines from coming into this state.
I've been about bringing more gas supply into Massachusetts. You know, I never stopped pipelines.
Would you consider your cancellation of 2 gas pipelines as Attorney General any contributor to rising energy costs here?
Well, first of all, I didn't do that.
I might make that my ringtone. I don't know. I have to. So.
Tim Dunn is here with us. Of course, he's covering politics now for the Boston Herald. Check him out at bostonherald.com. And, of course, all of his social media. Tim, you're covering the Republican primary. 3 really qualified candidates, well-funded,
sure,
as they're bragging, running for governor. How's that going, Tim?
It's going well. I mean, they're certainly busy. The campaigns are really active, and it seems like it's earlier and earlier with state races. You know, I mean, you expect the president's races, especially somebody like, you know, President Trump or something, and, you know, going out extremely early, but you don't really see that too often in state rep or governor races. And they're out, you know, it's still 10 months away, and they're
right,
putting out TV ads. They're doing tours all over the place. So they're really dedicated. They really want to get the nomination.
Look, a lot of people in my audience voted for her. I don't know if many of them are going to vote for her again. The utility costs, as you've been covering, just so expensive. That's not really a partisan issue. Everybody's got to pay them.
Absolutely. And, you know, while they all certainly have hit on the governor, and I think they're all, you know, kind of, you know, hitting the notes that we want to hit, you know, or their voter, you know, their expected voter base want to hit. I would say the one maybe, criticism I'd have is that, not criticism, I guess maybe if I could lend an ear of advice to any of their campaigns, is that eventually they're going to have to start saying what their ideas are.
Yes.
What they're about. Because if you just rail against the governor, you might win a primary, but you're not going to win the general.
Tim, I totally agree with you. And a nobody can't beat a somebody. And she's certainly a somebody. Having been attorney general and governor now for 4 years, whatever you think of her performance, she is the governor. Won statewide, many statewide elections. and a possible presidential candidate in the Democrat Party.
Sure.
Tim, you've been covering kind of a unique part of the campaign, which is trying to out-Republican each other or de-Republican each other.
Right.
Really, really, what is going on within the Republican primary as far as that goes?
Well, I think that's also them trying to, you know, and as you'd expect naturally, to kind of start separating each other from themselves, and they're going to go after each other in the primary. And what you have is you had the other two candidates, Shortsleeve and Keneally's camps, kind of accusing Minogue and jumping all over him for comments he did make.
Yes, you know, he made them.
On WBUR, where he distanced himself from any political party, and specifically really towards, you know, quote-unquote MAGA Republicanism. And, you know, that is a, you know, and that's a strategy he's obviously taking with his campaign. He doesn't want to be known as a MAGA. I thought maybe might have been better to do that after if you won the primary,
because right.
you kind of you're going after Republicans in the primary now.
Yes.
So I understand that thought for trying to get the rest of the state, which is a very important, you know, vast majority who are yes. Democrat leaning to come to you. But it seemed like it might have been a little premature, maybe a rookie mistake on his part to do that. And you know, and as you'd expect, the other campaigns are jumping on him. But then, you know, they all send out these quotes and they all talk about who's more Republican, who's more of a actual Republican. But you know, as everyone knows, money talks. And
yes.
if you look to see who's donated where, Minogue comes out looking probably the best in that regard. If you solely based off of your choice for a candidate off of just where they're donating to.
Okay.
He said, you know, he's a GOP mega donor. He
can, yes.
Even if he wasn't, though, the vast majority of all of his donations have gone to Republicans. You know, I think the last Democrat he donated to was 2015. 2013, Ed Markey.
Okay.
So that's what it was. But the other ones have donated. Well, Keneally hasn't, but his wife has.
Yes.
To Democrat causes.
Yeah, Keneally has not donated money to anybody other than Republicans.
Exactly. And then Shortsleeve has a lot of donations to Democrats. But hey, you know what? People can change, too.
Yes.
But he, if you look at it like that, he has by far the most donations to Democrats.
And he donated to a very important Bristol County candidate. Andrea Campbell.
That's right. That's
the
right.
Democrat Attorney General of Dartmouth.
Yeah, she's in South Dartmouth.
Now she's right. from Dartmouth. 508-996. Sir, we've got people on hold who want to speak to Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Chris. Tim, Don up in Stoughton here.
Don in Stoughton. How's it going?
Man, I'm just going crazy. I mean, Tim was talking about the gas pipeline shut down by Mara Healey. Mm-hmm. If you read the Constitution, it says interstate commerce is prohibited to all the states unless they get permission from Congress to take action in an interstate commerce situation. Did Governor Healey do that, or did she violate the Constitution by banning the gas pipelines, which is prohibited to her?
Well, I'm certainly not a constitutional lawyer, probably not even as astute as you are, but I would say that the explanation she gave me, and her press office wasn't happy about that whole scenario either, and they reached out to me, and the explanation they provided essentially said was the courts decided it. Well, no kidding. She was the attorney general, and a judge has to sign off on it eventually.
Right.
So that's what their explanation was. But, you know, like, what we kind of stick to is what she said. She's on video. I stopped them. Now she's saying I didn't stop them.
Right. No, you're exactly right, but this is even denied to the courts. It's up to the Congress. The Congress could determine if your request to act upon interstate commerce is actionable, not the courts.
That's good to know. That's good to know.
I don't know. I guess it's just a worthless piece of paper, according to the Democrats. But that's it, Tim. That's it, Chris. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call. Tim, are you focusing on, in addition to the politics, at the governor's race, are you focused at all on these ballot questions?
I am. I plan on getting more into those, but
okay.
There's been a few big ones that have come along, like the rent control, and that's a real big one. And actually, you would see it's not exactly a black and white or red and blue issue. You got a very, very liberal mayor, Michelle Wu in Boston, who's against that ballot measure.
Really?
Yeah, statewide. I mean, they have their own things going on in Boston. They have their own way there, but they're really in Boston against a statewide shift to rent control. There's also the the ever famous state auditor, audit of the legislature, that's getting refiled again. She got enough. Diana DeSaglio got enough signatures again. And there's, I feel like you're going to need a day and a half to vote this year, because
right.
there's going to be just like, I can't even remember all of them. There's so many.
I think I saw the number maybe somewhere around 15 or 12.
Yeah, it's a lot.
A lot of questions. And they all have very long explanations. We're going to have probably a very long ballot, right?
I would assume so. And it's going to take a long time to vote.
Right.
Yeah, and I know they sent out those packets, but they're going to be like the size of dictionaries, I'm imagining.
Well, fortunately, it's just good material for talk radio. We'll try to get through all the questions for you guys here on WBSM. Maybe we'll have Tim back to talk about some of them.
Sure.
So as the governor's race gets going here, does Maura Healey seem at all worried?
Well, she was actually asked that at so a day or two after that whole gas pipeline video came out, she had a press conference, and she was again going after Trump, criticizing him for in the government for not releasing LIHEAP funds, which we all know was a result of the government shutdown.
Which is what?
LIHEAP
funds are.
Oh, LIHEAP funds. They're low income heating energy assistance program. Yes. So for people with low income, it's helping you afford your heat bills.
Yep.
So she was slamming the president for that. And in the press conference, the questions got into different energy questions. They mentioned our report and the video from her the other day. And one reporter, I forget what station it was from, but they asked her, "Do you feel that the cost of living here, specifically energy costs, are a liability for your reelection?" She, no, absolutely not. She doesn't think that at all. And that may be a front to me. That seems like she's nervous, because if you react. You can hide your words. You can change your words. You can't change your reaction, your split-second emotional reaction. And the look in her face said, "Yes, I am worried."
Right, right. She's got to be, because I talked to her supermajority Democrats in the legislature. They're worried about it.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, they're bringing up reparations to distract people. In my opinion, that's why they're bringing it up. Tim, this MBTA Communities Act, having a lot of controversy around the state. I look at, the town of Rehoboth. I can't govern Rehoboth. They never sleep over there. The town over there at the town meeting, even though the selectmen put forward a pretty reasonably compromised package, they rejected it. I mean, they'd rather go to war with this governor, the people of Rehoboth. And there's a lot of towns like that throughout the Commonwealth, right?
Well, sure. Yeah, Milton's one of them. And there's a lot of them. I think a new one kind of is it wasn't my beat I was covering, but a new one I think is kind of stepping up and doing the same thing in the Boston area. I can't think of the actual town. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised in the reaction. I mean, you're telling these communities, you do this or else.
Right.
And I don't think that's really traditionally how government works. I know there's laws, but for this, I don't know. It just seems like it's a kind of get into your backyard kind of thing.
Oh, totally. Zoning has always been a ground up, literally from the ground up, whether you're doing it in Mattapoisett, you do it at town meeting. You're doing it in Rehoboth, you do it at town meeting. Freetown, you do it in the town meeting. You got planning board, all of that stuff, where you get the elected officials. But at the end of the day, zoning has always been the prerogative of the town meeting.
Absolutely. And if you break it down, there's probably a lot of good reasons why it should stay that way. I mean, who knows better about our roads and where we can put things and, the space we have to build things and how many people we can house than the local people.
And you need buy-in, the consent of the governed. And if you try to jam stuff in, it's kind of ironic, right, is currently the governor of Massachusetts is saying she's not going to hand over basic information about who's receiving SNAP benefits to the Trump administration, because they're looking for illegal aliens and people who don't deserve it on the federal food benefits. It makes sense. And the president is saying, if you don't give me that information, if you don't do what I ask, we're not going to give you the money.
Starting this week, actually.
Right.
Yeah, according to Agriculture Secretary Brooke Wallins, they're starting this week. They're going to be withholding that funding. So expect that to come up later in the week in the news. You'll start seeing these blue states who are going to be affected. You're going to start seeing their leadership, kind of squawking about it and yelling about it, about Trump.
And that includes Massachusetts.
It does. And I asked the governor directly about that after her press conference slamming the vaccine vote by the CDC. And we asked her about the SNAP thing, and I actually asked her, is Massachusetts transparent? And if so, why won't we turn over the information to the government? And she says that the information is not relevant. Okay. it's just the information is not relevant. That makes it easy. Okay.
Right.
So that's her stance.
And what you're going to see is they're going to start complaining about the fact that people are being cut off. But the thing is, there's a lot of people, certainly in the sound of my voice, to rely on SNAP, and it's legitimate.
Oh, sure. It's a shame. It's a real
shame. They're being
shame
held hostage.
Yeah, we all, and I'm sure we all know people, whether we know it or not.
Right.
But we all know somebody who need, you know, you need help every now and then in your life.
Right.
And that's totally legitimate. But I think that there is a big issue when it comes to exactly how many people are really needing this stuff, how many people don't need it, and how many people that don't need it are on it.
Yeah, that's the good way to put it, Tim. We have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald here. He's their political reporter up there and a local guy. Local guys. So I'm certainly happy to have him here, and it's a real resource. So, Tim, we're going to see, though, that she's going to complain about having funds withheld when she doesn't comply with the federal government. But isn't that, in fact, to a degree, what she's doing with the MBTA Communities Act?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right? Threatening to withhold funding for needed projects in the communities because they won't comply with her zoning demands.
That's a good point. Yeah, no, there really is a reflection, in actions there. I mean, they're withholding, whether it's above them, the federal government, or below them, the local government, they're not going to give you what you want.
We have Tim Dunn here. So, Tim, have you started to focus on the convention yet for the Republicans? Because that is starting to be a battle among the three candidates.
Not as much yet, but I know that they are going back and forth on who's endorsed who and who's doing what, who's raising what. And I plan on doing something because I want to get the actual information out there. But if you look at their Twitter pages or you look at their press releases, every single one of these governor candidates have claimed that they're raising the most money and have raised the most money.
Right.
So
it's math.
You know, at least two of them are lying. So I wasn't a math major, but
right. That's
what the math tells me.
And it's again, you can pick certain dates on the calendar and then you say, oh, from this point forward, that point forward. The battle for endorsements, that's pretty interesting, right?
It is, because you get, you know, like I had a Pulse in Politics in the Sunday paper yesterday, and it was listing all their endorsements. And you have Keneally announcing 23, which was a pleasure to write.
Right.
Good for him, 23 endorsements. A lot of them were state committee people and former state committee people. Interestingly, former Vice Chair Tom Mountain, who was, I think, didn't Baker dismiss him from the Republican Party?
Yes.
And then you had Shortsleeve announce, I think, like 9 or 10 or 11 new endorsements as well. We asked Keneally's camp if they had any endorsements recently, and they said no, but then criticized the other ones for having endorsements because we don't need endorsements. We got something better.
Minogue.
Yeah, Minogue's camp.
He has Tom Hodgson.
Oh, that's huge.
That's like, a huge endorsement.
That's amazing. I mean, you have a guy who was on, I think all three of Trump's campaigns,
yes.
Major part of them, a huge advocate for taking care of illegal immigration. That's a major, major, major.
He was Donald Trump before Donald Trump.
He really was.
On illegal immigration.
Oh, he really was. I mean, look at how Maura Healey and the state responded to him and when he was running the jail.
Yes.
You know, he's a major voice to have.
And he's with Minogue. Did you see the back, and I don't know how far this is made into the press, you have Seth Akins, who's running for the district attorney job here in Bristol County. At this point, it's against Tom Quinn, who's the Democrat at this point. I guess he pulled his endorsement back from Keneally.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I did not see that. I'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah, I don't think it's been in the media. I may have just broke some news.
I think you may have.
And it's a good person to break news with. Tim Dunn.
I'll take it.
From the Boston Herald. Stick around, folks. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
She said, I've seen you in here before. I said, I've been here a time or two. She said, hello, my name is Bobby Joe. Meet my twin sister, Betty Lou. And we're both feeling kind of wild tonight. You're the only cowboy in this place, and if you're up for a rodeo.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McGraw. A little Toby Keith for you. We have Tim Dunn here in studio from the Boston Herald. So, Tim, we have more to... So, we got Bud Williams.
Bud right? Williams, yeah.
Representative Bud Williams of Springfield, Massachusetts. He's the chairman of the Equity Committee in the House?
Yeah,
or the Joint Committee?
Racial Equity, Justice, and Inclusion, I believe.
And he's going to have a hearing coming up.
In January.
Bud Wilkins, I think, is going to be in the news for more than just that. But Anyway.
maybe right.
Right? I may be crazy, right? but it just would be a lunatic you're looking for. But Senator Montigny, our own senator, has been sending letters to the Massachusetts Convention Center. And they're going to comply, or we don't know?
So far, the CEO is going to comply. And I think the letter was directed towards him to provide all this information on, you know, all these withdrawals from the public fund by the former chief financial officer, on the destruction of employee laptops and the swapping out of employee laptops. In the middle of two investigations, also, I forgot to mention that they had a complete overhaul, you know, perfect timing, a complete overhaul of their IT system in the middle of these two investigations.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It was time to clean house. You know,
this is very Watergate-like.
It seems so. You know, just all these allegations of corruption. But it looks like the good thing is that it looks like the CEO, if he's still there, we're trying to confirm still if he's still on board with them, is going to be providing this information and will testify.
Wait a second. Is it possible that they had a midnight massacre to get like Nixon did, to get rid of the attorney general, to get rid of the convention center executive director who's been complying with Senator Montigny's demands?
It could be. I mean, if
they fired him, that's like a midnight massacre.
It really is. And we have so far got no response from them. But they did have that meeting. It was an emergency meeting that it seems that they were all rushing to get to. And according to Vernon's lawyer, it was to terminate. I mean, we still have yet to figure that out.
What we do know is they posted the meeting on a Friday night and held the meeting on the Sunday evening meeting, emergency meeting. And that is because of the way the agenda was set up and the timing, a violation of the open meeting law.
Absolutely. It's supposed to be two business days or 48 hours notice, none of which was what happened. And actually, speaking of Rep. Williams, Bud Williams, he actually reached out with concern about that, to his credit. He told me he's very concerned. I read your report. So he's all over it as well.
So you've heard from Bud Williams?
I have. And I was going to give him a call back probably tomorrow. So
we have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. So this is such a huge story, guys. It really is. I mean, that is an enormous facility. Big, huge budget, lots of patronage, and all under the control of the governor's appointees.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to see how far it reaches up to Governor Healey. You know, we're going to try to see how much oversight she directly has or her office directly has. As of right now, the focus seems to be on the MCCA, the Mass Convention Center Authority Board of Governors.
And the speculation is that if, in fact, the African-American executive director was fired, if he was fired, it may have been because he has been so forthcoming with Senator Montigny's subpoena for information. Correct?
Absolutely. It's what his lawyer calls retaliation. So it seems to be, you know, so far it seems to be that way. But you know, we got to wait and see what the actual truth is first. So
before the Boston Herald writes anything, they make sure it's the truth. I know that I had a good relationship over the years. I was at Boston Herald Radio. Light a candle, pour some out for the Boston Herald Radio. They're no longer with us. But certainly Howie Carr is here in the afternoons here on WBSM, and his columns are still probably the most read after yours articles, Tim.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that'd be really an honor if that happened. But, hey, Chris, on that front, what I got to tell you is
yes,
you got something better than Herald Radio. You were at WBSM, and I had recently worked in New York City at Fox, as you've mentioned.
Yes.
And I've driven for a long time, every week and coming back here, and I've had to listen to a lot of local talk radio.
Yes, sir.
There is no more local talk radio. It's a very rare, unique treat that people have at WBSM. You have you, Tim, Barry, Brian, all over the place. I have not seen another radio station in the next 100 miles that has that much local, on-air, in-studio talent. It's very unique.
Tim, I really appreciate that.
No. Hey, you guys are a serve. I mean, this city and this greater area is very, very lucky. So
Tim, we're so glad that you came back from New York City to work at the Boston Herald and expose all of what's going on in what I think is going to be an unbelievable year for news.
I think so, too. 2026 will be very busy.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Tim, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I loved it.
All right. So, Tim Dunn, and let me just put this person on hold. 508-996-0. I'm going to take a break, and then I'll be back. Tim's out of here, folks. Barry is in today, so make sure you stick around. But I'll be back. If you're on hold, stay there.
Horses singing, whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Welcome back to the program. Again, I want to thank Tim Dunn for taking time out of his busy schedule covering all of Massachusetts politics and really important issues to come and sit with us for an hour. And I know he does it with Barry as well. It's just great having Tim at the Boston Herald. I heard from my friend Bob McConnell. Let me tell you something. I thought I was a tough guy. Bob McConnell has heart surgery, and he's out the next night. He's out the next night. Prayers work, my friends. Bob McConnell, strong guy. Republican state committee man, Fairhaven guy. He's texting me. Mike Keneally will be in Rochester at the Republican town committee this evening out at the Ponderosa. The Ponderosa, he'll be there at 6:30. So Mike Keneally, if you never met Mike Keneally, running for governor, good guy. Likely the next governor. I don't know. It's going to be a competitive primary. We know that. But if he makes the primary, he'll will be the governor of Massachusetts. He'll be at the Ponderosa tonight in Rochester, open to the public. If you want to meet Mike Keneally for governor, and that's courtesy of Republican State Committee Man Bob McConnell. Bob McConnell, like I said, prayers work. Bob's out of the hospital and out there doing great things for the Republic. And that's good. That's really good. You got to check out Tim Dunn's social media, because he updates as soon as he publishes the story. And these days, Tim Dunn is on the cutting edge of what's going on in Republican politics and statewide politics. He's a sharp guy, really great contacts, and at a very fine newspaper, the Boston Herald. So stick around for Barry Richard. He's in today. Tomorrow he won't be. So make sure you get him today while you still got him. And of course, after that, the Boston Herald's own Howie Carr. Howie Carr will be here. And that's always a treat, right? So I'm going to get out of here, and God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. We've got Sue Conley tomorrow from Cape Cod. She's fighting the offshore wind, trying to come onto the beach over there, using a big cable coming out of the beach. So, and we'll have Tim White tomorrow talk about the last dawn of